1 minute, so we will wrap up.
See, if we announce this for 9:10, we wouldn't get started at 9:20.
We have 10, 15 minute chat window.
Now, see, I spent the way down for 30.
So you got here in time.
Yeah, but we're probably going to be a little.
Well.
All right, well, for those who weren't able to be here last week, just to kind of bring you up to speed on things, last week we began the chapter on character, and let me go ahead and pull the slide up. There we go. We're wrapping out the first of these three circles, the foundational values. And what we've already discussed within this is faith, which service. But we talked about how faith lays the foundation. Okay, our beliefs about how we came to be, our beliefs about God, our beliefs about this world, all those things are very foundational. And then what we believe about that will result in our choices about how we choose to live, our character, our moral, ethical decisions that we make. And then what our character is then affects, I think this next slide, how we live that out in service to others. Okay, so we're at the last piece of this first circle, service, and then we'll be moving on to unique design. And if I'm correct, next weekend we will not have this.
That's
right?
Correct. John Hobbs will be doing the Sunday school hour next week and preaching.
Oh, he's going to be here.
Yeah.
Okay, so.
And Kenny Davis will be here for worship.
Do you need to say anything else?
No, I mean, and there's a dinner Saturday night at 5 o'clock, a covered dish.
Okay.
They'll be speaking there too. Those of you that know him won't miss it. Those of you that may not know him ought to come and find out why the ones that know him won't miss it.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point. So yeah, faith should lead to moral and ethical actions, which is seen in our character, and these actions should lead to compassionate service, which is kind of where we let off here. And at the end of last week, we had just begun a conversation about we were talking about people who have really impacted us in terms of, you know what, I think I'm actually in the wrong slides, hold on a second. People who have impacted us in terms of their life of service, and Dale, I'm not going to lie, your name came up, but you probably are happy you weren't here. Not that it was wonderful things, but I'm sure you would have not necessarily one to sit here and hear it about yourself, but I know we spoke a little bit about Mike Shirley's mom, who a lot of us had the honor and pleasure of knowing, Marilyn. And what I thought we could do here just for the first 5 minutes is kind of pick back up with that. So where you're seated, or if you want to move, one thing I was thinking is how important service is to be instilled in people when they're young. Because, we were saying there's some people that it's just they ooze a heart of servanthood. It doesn't seem hard for them. It doesn't seem like a decision for them. It doesn't seem like they have to really purpose to do that, because I think by default we can be kind of naturally selfish people. But there are some people where that just does not seem to be the case. And I don't think it's that God has necessarily created somebody like you can be unselfish very easily. You, it's going to be really hard. I mean, now, maybe not, but I think a lot of it has to do more with our upbringing and what's instilled in us from the time we're young. So, I don't know necessarily Marilyn's background, but my guess is there was some of that instilled in her upbringing, or that she saw in others. I know for me, when I was in seventh grade, I actually took your mom to school, which sounds funny, but we had a thing. We had to bring in somebody that we respected, and I can't remember what it was called. It wasn't like hero, but it was the type of thing, you brought somebody from your community. Yeah, a role model. And I remember taking Marilyn, and in seventh grade, I'll never forget it. And and introducing her to my class and explaining why she was so, you know, so much of a role model. And I was thinking about that last week when we were talking about her. And I think we all have had people like that, whether it be, you know, within our own families or within our community, some extension of our community. So just to give everybody an opportunity to maybe discuss that, if you want to, for 5 minutes here, just talk amongst yourselves in small groups, 3 or 4 people. I know we heard from Roger about his mom, but some of you didn't get a chance to share in the larger group. So let's talk in the small groups for 5 minutes, just talking about people that really impacted us in terms of service. And then we'll move on to the next part of this discussion. So go ahead. For how many of you was that pretty easy? And maybe the difficult part was to kind of narrow it down to just a couple to discuss. I think the thing about this is it's so impactful, and it's because it's so outward, you know. So somebody's acts of service, the reason they oftentimes impact us is because we've been the beneficiary of that. Like we've been able to experience their service and their love and compassion, and it really is impactful, you know. Whether it's a complete stranger or somebody that they know well, you know, there's just something about serving others. I mean, it's very obvious why it's discussed so much in Scripture. So another, just again, we're still kind of catching up here to where we left off, but in the book he talks about 5 elements of service, and those are the ones listed up in the yellow box there: respect, community, concern, responsibility, and action. And then there's statements about each one, and just saying that without these, our service can actually become more harmful than helpful sometimes. And we talked about how we can oftentimes go in with our agenda and our I want to fix things. And I remember we did, I don't remember what the series was called, but the mission, was it a video series? Mission Dilemma, yeah. And that kind of characterized, you know, how this might play out in the mission field, but I know that, you know, some of that discussion was short-term missions are great, but sometimes we can actually cause more problems in how we approach it than actually helping in the long term. And I think, you know, you can come back to some of these elements and you can see how some of these things perhaps are missing when we create those issues, and, you know, versus engaging in long-term relationship even though you're there for a short window, and how you can do that meaningfully. So anyway, service kind of encompasses all of this. And another thing that is talked about, if we're unwilling to serve others, which I think this is on this slide, if we're unwilling to serve others, we will likely not discover our life calling, because it's within the context of service that, it's within the context of calling. Wait a second, I'm just reading this. We will not discover our life calling because the context of calling is service. So to kind of link it back to this whole overall discussion of life calling, this is a pretty key element to it, that service be in place. So here we go. Life cannot be discovered, or life calling cannot be discovered if we are unwilling to serve others. So this was one more thing we had talked about. We talked about kind of the 3 levels of service. You have servitude, where you're basically forced into service, and you do it because of others. You have service, where you decide, okay, I'm going to do this. You may not be thrilled about it, but you at least have the power of decision there. It's not, you know, forced on you. And then servanthood, we kind of characterize more of like a spirit-heart thing, where it's just an attitudinal act of serving another person. It's kind of like that's your starting point. Your default setting has become one of service, and that's pretty incredible when that happens. And so that's kind of described as servanthood. So we have this kind of 3-tiered look at it. Okay, now this is where we're going to go. This definition of servanthood: love acted out in life's relationship in a way that places the needs of others before one's own self-interest without exploiting one's self. What he does is he actually takes this very well-known passage out of 1 Corinthians, which I think most everybody would know this, And he was saying, if you operate on that definition, that service is really love acted out, what he does with this is he actually swaps out the word love for servanthood. Which, just take a moment and read that through on your own. Now, he has a very high regard for Scripture, so he realizes that he can't actually go ahead and change these words, but it's an interesting thought to read the same passage with the word servanthood and then think about how this really describes an attitude of servanthood. And I think it is an accurate picture. I mean, even though I understand he's altering Scripture a little bit here, with servanthood really being love acted out, I think this is just kind of a neat way to think about it. Any thoughts on that? I don't know, I've spent a lot of time on it, but
I like the S line a lot. It's like. A servant sees an opportunity, he just does it.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't, like, a lot of times I'll say, somebody else will get that, you know. And a servant just not thinking about it, just does it. I think Steve and Joyce a lot, they, in their ministry, things would come up and they would just do it. They came to my rescue many times. It was like they didn't think, they came and did it. So I really like that part.
Yeah.
And servanthood really springs from a heart of love.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that's very good. I think you can't really serve the right way without being
involved,
where you have the wrong motive or something.
Yeah, because if servanthood is problem-based, we're wanting to fix a problem, some of these things can fall away, right? But it's probably not true in servanthood, but if servanthood is people-based, then really this should be descriptive of what our service looks like. And true servanthood, I believe, is people-based. Yeah, Melanie.
I think in our house we always say that love is a verb. And so I think this, when I read that, it really kind of bridged that. Because it takes
said.
Love. I'm sorry?
You say what?
Love is a verb.
Oh, love is a verb.
Because it's an action word, so we're taking love from your heart. Yes, it's a Toby Max. And that's where it started from, but it's the truth of taking it from the word love to the action step of serving. So I thought that was really neat to change the word there to serving, because that's ultimately the verb.
I think sometimes we ask ourselves, like, we know we should love somebody. Like, okay, I know I need to love this person in this situation. I know I need, you know, whatever it is. We don't always know how to do that. And I think if you think of it in the context of service, it's maybe a little bit easier. Like, okay, I'm going to love this person, and I'm going to serve them. And then you can maybe see some of the more practical steps in how to do that. So, I think you're right. They go hand in hand. Love is a verb. And who was that?
DC Talk. It was DC Talk.
DC Talk, yeah. If you're not familiar with the song, you should look it up.
I'm not really taking my preaching cues from this class, but it just happens that sometimes they coincide. And I'm not going to preach on servanthood today. I'm going to preach on actually the opposite of last week, which was on fellowship. This is going to be on the value of quiet time, you know, being alone in a healthy way. Anyway, a quote I found in studying Oswald Chambers, I want to read now. It's going to be part of the message, but it's so good. And I think it speaks a little even deeper than what that's saying. Because that's
deeper
how.
Deeper than the scripture?
What's that?
Deeper than the scripture?
Well, no, that's not scripture. That's a paraphrase. I mean, it's getting to the heart of it, I think. So let me just read the quote. Let me read the quote. The lasting value of our public service for God is measured by the depth of the intimacy of our private times of fellowship and oneness with Him.
Can I read that one more time?
The lasting value of our public service for God is measured.
I'm reading my Bible.
Three times is good, right? The lasting value of our public service for God is measured by the depth of the intimacy of our private times of fellowship and oneness with Him. You know, it's. I mean, I shouldn't characterize it as deeper, but I think it ultimately it's servanthood. You know, the third one of those that on your chart, and this it's an attitude. It really grows out of our walk with God. I mean,
right.
There, otherwise, service is for self. Many times, it's, and it can still be for people that know God. But I think the closer we get to God, the less our service is about us. It's about God, and it's about God's children. So it's just who we are. It becomes our identity in the Lord. I think it's really a great... You know, I was getting ready, I was preparing Brian's service yesterday, and in the beginning of the service, there's a line in the liturgy that says, it says, we worship God and remember before Him His child, Brian Scott Davis, or His son. And I change it to servant. Because I think Brian was a true servant. You know. He never considered his own needs or schedule.
And as true children of God, we should be servants.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, yesterday I got to talk with Laura's niece, Kiersey, and Paul's daughter, Izzy, Elizabeth Hoffer, and her husband, Sheehan. Now, their little baby is 6 weeks old, is it? And she is the one that had the bilateral retina detachment, so she's blind, totally blind, this new baby. And they found out the day before the funeral that she's deaf. And, you know, I looked at these two young people, and she's a couple years younger than Joanna, and I said to her, I said, Izzy, I said, how are you and Sheehan, I looked at him, I said, how are you guys dealing with this, and what's it doing to your relationship? And he said, I never thought we could be any closer than we were. He said, but Izzy and I are closer. And then she said, you know, all I know is that God created her, and in His eyes, she's perfect in His eyes. And she said that we just said to each other the other night that we are along for the ride here, whatever God has in her life, and that we will care for her, we will love her, we will always love her just like we do right now. And she said, we just feel right now God's showing us that we just hold her all the time to show her that she's loved and secure because that's all she can feel. And I just thought when I looked at them, you know, what a statement. You know, she said, we're with her for life to just do anything we can for her. And I just felt that. You talk about servanthood as a parent in the eyes of brokenness at the same time. But it was amazing talking to them.
Uh,
This week in home group, we are going through this thing right now where we're studying this thing called Poets and Saints. It's done by a musical group called... But anyway, we were looking at this one saint called Saint Therese. I think she's from France or something like that. And she only lived to be 24 years old. But her life was so remarkably marked by love, the way that she just loved people, loved God's creation. And in it, she writes in her like journal or memoirs or whatever, this moment in her life. Her mom died when she was very young, and I think she lost a bunch of her siblings very young, like five of them, I think, died. And she was pretty young when this happened. I think she was like 12 or 13 years old. And she overheard her father saying something about her. There was this little like family tradition that they carried on for her since I think she was the youngest. And he was just saying, well, you know, maybe we won't have to do this for much longer, you know. And she overheard this. And instead of like being hurt and being a victim and being, you know, selfish, she chose to love her father. Like it was this moment where she made a choice to love. And she called it the little way, like the little way in life. Like in other words, she thought of loving people and serving as like these little flowers that she scatters about in her life. And I was blown away by this. I was reminded how much, you know, Anne-Marie, you were talking about like there are some people who are more seemingly disposed to service than others. And I realize there's a lot of factors that go into that. But I think at the end of the day, it's simply a choice. And even people who it seems to come easily for, there had to be a moment at some point where a choice was made, you know, to just walk that path. And then it's just a series of those choices, you know. Being unselfish and being a servant, I think I would venture to say that for anybody, even our most saintly servants, there are moments where they have to choose to do that. There's always, you know, a choice set before you. And that's what makes it so beautiful. I think that's what makes love and servanthood so beautiful, is that we know that it is a choice that people walk out. People could very easily not come and help you change your flat tire. People could very easily not say a kind word when you're being a jerk, you know, but yet they do. And I don't know. And that's why God's acts of love to us, I think, are so beautiful, because it's not something he would have had to do. And yet, because he is love, he can't act outside of love. So he acts in love. And it's beautiful to us. Our hearts respond to it. I don't know, just some thoughts.
No, I thought of her too earlier in our discussion. I almost brought her up because it does very much so connect. There's a quote, and I'm not going to get the quote right, but the concept, the idea behind it, but it's something about like 1,000 little decisions in the same direction, 1,000 little choices in the same direction. And I think, to touch on what Matt was saying, yeah, I think servanthood is 1,000 little decisions in the same direction. You know, and you piece all those things together, and soon you start to see a life of servanthood. And it's not the type of thing like, well, I did this last week and I already came to the work day. I just don't have it in me to do. Not that we don't need, you know, time to for resting and things like that, but you know, we're never off the hook. You know what I mean? We're never like, well, I paid my dues last weekend, I can just take a break this weekend. I think true lives of service, you don't really exercise that right. You know, we lay down our rights, and it's just 1,000 little choices, 1,000 little decisions in the same direction. It's easier said than done, but I think that's where stems from, and that is what that woman's life was marked by. Yeah.
Something I thought of, it's kind of in relation to this, I think. I mean, to this passage, or paraphrase. But like when I think about the servants that have really, their lives just spoken, you know, I think that they, each of them, had an understanding first that, like, it's like the idea that they were loved, therefore they can love. That they were forgiven, therefore they can forgive. you know, kind of that, it's like when we understand how much we have been given, you know, the grace, the love, it's like, you know, that just, how can you not? You know, it's like with our kids, you know, one of my main job descriptions is refereeing. I feel like I just referee fights all the time. And one of the things the kids will say all the time, but he's not nice, or she's not nice. She's not being kind. He's not being kind. You know, they're not loving me. You know, why should I love them? And it makes sense. I mean, when you look at it in a very black and white, yes, that person right now is not acting in a way that deserves your love. But I always pull that, you know, the idea of, yes, but you have been loved and you have been forgiven. Therefore, regardless of what your brother or sister is saying or doing, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what they're doing. You can still serve and love. And, you know, it's just a freeing thing. And I was just thinking about the servants, really, who've been inspiring their lives. And that seems to kind of be like a common thread with them. They just have this, you know, that understanding.
The other thing in servanthood is often the greatest acts of service are the ones that really go unnoticed. Mm-hmm. You know, the Matt and Applehang, the cleaning the church, and empty the trash cans, and different things like that. Asking our job, and we go to Shiloh when we're not here, so we're not knocking on church. But Brett Rush has been focusing on Jesus' first miracle. In John 2, where Jesus turned the water into wine. And when the head waiter came to Mary for some reason or another, you know, Mary said to Jesus, you know, hey, they're out of wine, do something. And I guess she knew that he would. And so Jesus turned to the servants and said, fill these jars with water, you know. And Brett kind of petitioned us that day to fill jars, just to go out and fill jars for God's service. So in the mundane things in life that we do, they're just great acts of service. And God always puts these acts of service, whatever they are, changing a tire, emptying trash cans, sweeping a floor, your work, whatever you do, doing it to the glory of God. You know, they're all acts of service. Mm-hmm. And you know, some of the great acts of service that people notice, the people that are on the forefront, that's great, but there's also many people that just serve, and it's part of their nature. Steve, you know? He's just, I don't know what we were talking about that here, sorry, Steve, but, you know, it almost killed Steve if he couldn't serve somehow. His life would be a void. I wish I had more of that kind of partner. But, you know, to just fill jars, you know. Well, Lord, I'm just called to fill jars. So that's what I'll do. And it does bring glory to God, and God blesses them. He really does bless that heart. It's obedient. That message has just been really good. He's been carrying that on for a while. And that really hit me that day, just to fill jars. You know, my thanklessness in my job, I'm just a fill jars.
Something that kind of continues this thought a little bit further. He takes a look, and this is, I can read it. A quote from Martin Luther King Jr. here. He says, "All men are caught in an inescapable network of mutuality, tied in a single garment of destiny. I can never be what I ought to be until you are what you ought to be. And you can never be what you ought to be until I am what I ought to be. This is an interrelated structure of reality." And where he's going here is this idea of service. There should be a mutual influence. Like you were talking about Izzy and their baby, and I was thinking about Mark and Kristen and Victoria and different situations, but how you know, one of the things that I know they often talk about is how she could do nothing but just breathe. That's all Victoria could really do. And how that was just almost like a service to God, like a worship of God, that even her breath was worship to him. And so if you think of that kind of in the context of service, you know, and then as Mark and Kristen were loving, serving her, there's this idea of like such a mutual influence. So, you know, with Izzy and this baby, they're going to do everything in their power to influence this little life and to love her. And what's beautiful is as they serve her, her life is going to impact them. So as Mark and Kristen, you know, were serving Victoria, loving her, her life has, you know, impacted them obviously and beyond. And those are kind of two very difficult situations. And you know, we can take this down a little bit to what our lives look like more on a regular basis. And what this is talking about is how there really should be a mutual influence. You've heard people go on mission trips and come back, and they talk about how, like, we went down there to serve them, but we were the ones who were blessed. Like, I hear that every time a team comes back from a mission trip. Or, you know, they just go do anything. Any, like, set, determined, I'm going to go and serve in this way. You almost always come back and you have somehow been impacted. You've been influenced. And that's where this is heading and kind of where this quote connects to. This is not the way we should go about it. What he's saying here is our common attitude when we kind of enter in these situations of service is in our North American mindset, you can really just say our human mindset, is when we interact with people different than us, oftentimes our starting point, whether we like it or not, is some form of judgment. Okay? Not necessarily, you know, even an intentional way of doing that, but oftentimes our default setting is to kind of start with some form of judging, whether it's the person or the situation, and then we want to correct. Okay, so we want to correct what we see that doesn't seem quite right, and then we want to direct how it should be changed or how that change should be brought about. And then there's forced change. Okay, and he's saying this is very oftentimes the model that we kind of naturally fall into. One of the other things we talked about with in our home group, one of the, you know, it was talking about marriage relationships or just relationships in general. And I'll be honest, I mean, Aaron, you can agree if you want. I probably default to this much more, where it's like, well, I think there's a problem, and I'm going to correct the problem. I'm going to direct how it should be corrected, and then I'm going to try and force the change. And has that usually worked? You know, my husband, he does not like being forced. And I don't think anybody does, but it usually only makes things worse. Right? I mean, I think we would agree on that. But that's what I default to. That is hands down what I default to. And I think I'm right, because I think I know what's, you know, should, and it's, I feel justified in it. And even if there's some form of, like, let's say, behavior modification that happens, it's not lasting, it's not healthy, it's not, it doesn't work. It's not ultimately the best. But the mutual influence model, what you see here, it's kind of like there's usually some sort of resistance, which is why it comes through as forced change. Then the mutual influence model here, you start with our role is not to judge or to change or judge people, but to love them. So you start with a point of loving and accepting, which is where you see that respect piece. It's not to correct, but to learn alongside them. So then you have this listen and learn, and this establishes some trust. It's not to direct. Our role is not to take care of our role is not to take care of or direct people, but to serve in a partnership with them. This dignifies this. Sorry, I need one of those clickers. that establishes kind of an atmosphere of dignifying. What you end up with is there's a responding to what has happened, and then you see mutual influence, where really through whatever process has just been walked out, both parties, whether we're talking individuals or larger groups, you know, whatever it is, both parties come, you know, away from this experience, both being positively mutually influenced. So, any thoughts on this? I see some people are trying to write quickly. If you do want to jot it down, I'll leave it up.
I right away want to say, yeah, but.
Explain.
No, it's very true.
Yeah.
And yet there's something about our, I don't know if it's Western or human nature that, yeah, we want to. That seems, it's very, in other words, what that is it's, you're rubbing up alongside of people and interacting with them with open hands, mm-hmm. and not, you know, grasping at what you know and what you think. And I don't think that it means we don't let truth go. That's not what it's saying. Right away, I don't know, maybe that's what it is. Right away, I think, like, what about the truth?
Where's truth in it, yeah.
And I don't think that it is that we lose sight of the truth.
No, I have the same knee-jerk reaction. It's like, well, where is truth? In the, because that's like, for me, I need to know that. Like, I need to, and that's probably what most often sets me on this path, is my, well, I think truth is clearly laid out in this one, so I'm going to follow this. And I think it's kind of missing it, yeah.
When you look at respect, trust, dignity, and influence, I keep thinking of Izzy and Sheehan, but you can see a mutual influence there with little Rob and Caroline and the parents. And Izzy is in her third year in medical school, and she has a rotation coming up with physical medicine. And she said in the last few weeks, I've decided my heart has been really tugged at to go into physical medicine and work with people who have had strokes and they have no response, and I can work with them, you know, to help bring healing in their lives. And she didn't actually say that it was because of the baby, but she said, I know that I need to be working in the field where God really wants to make a change and a healing here. And she said it's not something you can give a treatment for or a pill for. She said it may take months to see one little muscle move. And when she said that, I thought about Gretchen, because that was Gretchen's exact statement. When she went back into medicine after surgery, she said, the hardest thing is that in surgery you can correct a problem immediately, but in physical medicine you just have to really keep working and loving and helping the person. And, you know, I think that without that baby even being able to look at them, you know, it's developing respect, trust, and dignity. And they both are, both parent and child.
But where this becomes rough is that you're talking about adversaries. You know, the previous chart said relating to people who are different.
Right.
But what I think Joyce is saying is true, that it does happen when you face any problem, but boy, when it comes to somebody who's different. Mm-hmm. I wonder if others can think of examples. I think about the guy who directs the critical incident stress management team, who is as diametrically opposite of me as you can probably get. You know, he's his beliefs, his lack of faith, you know, just everything. And yet, I think by the grace of God, I've related to him in this way. Mm-hmm. And I did love and accept him for who he is. And he, in turn, has respected me. And then, I mean, I really see this having. And so we are mutually influencing each other. And I pray, you know, that there's going to be a change in you. But I wonder if other people can think of somebody in your life that either has gone well or isn't going well in that regard. It's a challenge. Because like Matt, I want to say, you know, you're not seeing the truth here, you know. Mm-hmm. But I just have to, I can't change him. All I can do is love and respect him. And he has brought a lot into my life. That's, and I appreciate it. I'm sorry, go ahead. Who was going to say?
I know Robin likes to do the bottom one. She's very direct. She puts it right out there. And I've learned over the years that many times she is right. So I can't fight it. And I'm thinking of an example of like a couple weeks ago. I was making a sandwich and I got a knife out of the drawer and I closed the drawer to my dip. And it was still like a half inch open. And she goes, "Aren't you going to close that?" You know. And so I sarcastically put my fingers and, you know, closed the door, and she caught me doing that. And then I got this glare, and I knew it was all over. But anyway, she said, "Well, who's going to clean out all the crumbs in that drawer that get in there because it was left half open?" And she was right. And actually, I went to work, and there's a drawer by the lathe that I work at, and I do that all the time, and I open the door, and there's like these little metal chips all over the place. So, yeah, it was a habit I needed to correct, and even if it's not the best way of saying it, if it has to be said, has to be said, and the truth comes out. And even though it's easy to resist and all offense to on the receiving end of that, we still have to be open. I do.
If I can give an example, this just keeps popping in my head as we're talking. When I was growing up, I went to a public elementary school, and in that elementary school, we had a disabled janitor. He had gotten like rheumatic fever or one of those when he was young, and it took his hearing. And it took his speech. The only thing he could do was make noises. And a lot of the kids would make fun of him and all this kind of thing. And he also was totally bald. He took his hair. And he had two bumps on his head. So he earned the name Bumps from the kids. He accepted that. He didn't have a problem with that. Matter of fact, he would make fun with us of that. Plus, whenever he was in doing his work at night, a lot of times, say Thanksgiving was coming up, we didn't know that this was always coming, but he was an artist. He had the God-given talent of being an artist. He would bring in colored chalk, back when we had chalkboards, and he would put like a masterpiece on our chalkboards. And he would not just do this for one room, he would go throughout and like every other room do this. And this was something that you learned to accept and respect. And it would be like, when's he gonna do this again? And we all got to appreciate him because of what he possessed as far as his talent, plus as you got to know him and talk to him in the only way you could, then he had a sense of humor, which he would share with you. And like with me, being that I had some special circumstances and was picked on by kids and stuff growing up, he saw what was going on, and he would pull me aside, and he would say, you know, just, you know, like, don't mind them, mm-hmm. let them go. And he was a great source of inspiration, too, mm-hmm. because he knew what it was to go through being different. So a lot of this, and he did a lot of that with trust, with dignity, mm-hmm. with respect, all that tied in.
I'm so kind of glad you brought up marriage, because when we were looking at the First Corinthians, and everyone thinks of that as the marriage verses, and I was thinking that's really supposed to be our visual of what marriage looks like and what family looks like and what God's order looks like. And in the world, I don't think it does, and we're supposed to set that example, but it's not easy to do. And I was thinking, especially when you brought this up, like in the beginning of our marriage, I did the bottom because I knew best. So, and I thought that was working for a long time because Ed did a really good job of following the rules until I found out that he was just following the rules in front of me, because that's what you do when you're forced, right? You follow the rules. Sorry, that was the bus. But that's kind of how that works. That's what works with your kids. If you're forcing change, they just do that. Like, we do that in front of you. But then that's not the heart changer. That's just what we want you to perceive. Mm-hmm. And so what I was thinking when you put up the second thing was the love and acceptance comes right back to the First Corinthians again. It's everything in the listen and learn and the serve and partner. That's everything a marriage should be. That's the design and order we're supposed to be showing the world, our relationship. And so God and truth is in all of it. It's everything that we're supposed to model. And when I stopped trying to change Ed, God, and let God be God, we were loving and accepting each other. We were listening and learning. We are far from perfect, but his heart changed. I didn't have to do God's job. Yeah. And so then it falls into place. So the truth, I feel like, is in there because God's in there. Mm-hmm. But I know it's still hard to see it because the word, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
So.
No, actually, I was just sitting here thinking, like, when you look at this bottom one, there's so much control depicted in this, and it's in our hands. You know, I do this. I correct. I direct. I force this. Whereas here, there has to be room for God. Like, this cannot work without God. This you can force without God. You know what I mean? Hand, absolutely. Usually you do. Whereas this, like, you do your part, and it's up to, you know, kind of both sides doing their part of carrying out a respectful, trusting, dignifying, you know, relationship. And yet this is only going to happen through the work of God. And there's a relinquishing of control here that's very healthy. You know, I think for us to have to do that, easier said than done usually, but you can walk this out and remove God from the equation. You cannot walk this out and remove God from the equation. Which is exactly what you were just saying. We are a little bit over. This is great. One other thing I was thinking about, an example that was brought up last week, Dale, when you weren't here. Ron Hanna was talking, and to come back to what you were saying about how a lot of things kind of happen, go unnoticed. And Ron was mentioning how you had gone to Barnes Hall for so many years. And is that still, okay. I didn't even know that, and he's still going. And just what I know of Dale, I don't think Dale goes in with those young people and takes this approach. That's just my hunch, but that is not your approach with them. But I would imagine, and in some ways it could be easy because obviously they're in the situation that they're in because they made some bad choices, probably. And it'd be easy to kind of position yourself in a better than they are place. I know better than, you know, and come in with this kind of finger of correction, but I can say that I fully, knowing you and knowing your character, I'm sure you walk this out every single time you go in there. And the impact that I think that has had, I can only imagine, but, you know, the young lives that have been impacted through that. So I think, you know, when I was looking at this, I was thinking very much so of Dale in that situation and
the bottom
encountering
rope
people.
Was me in control.
What?
The bottom rope puts me
right.
in control.
Right.
The top one puts God in control.
Right. And I would venture to say, Dale, you've probably been very influenced by them. Probably you feel they've influenced you even more than you've influenced them. And they touched your life, which is the beauty of it, and that's really the act of God in all of this. But yeah, it's giving God control and surrendering in service to others, and it's a beautiful thing when it happens. So I don't want to cut anyone off. Next week will be John Hobbs, and then the following week, I wasn't sure if we had time today, but we could probably devote a whole session to it. He does a teaching, a video on Dietrich Bonhoeffer and how his life kind of pulls together all three areas of faith, character, and service. And it's really interesting. There's actually a short version of the video and a longer version. Given the fact that we didn't get to it today, maybe we'll just take the longer version and watch it. And if you know anything about his life, he's got a pretty unique life and some interesting things to talk about. So we'll probably just pick up with that the week after next. Kind of round out the foundational values piece, and then we'll move into unique design. So we'll just leave it at that. Say amen, so we can go get kids, and I'm sure there's people waiting out that door.